Committee on Senate File 430, the Omnibus Pension Bill for Sunday, May 20, 2007. We do have a quorum on both sides. Mr. Martin has prepared a summary of all the differences, as I understand, in between the bills that have passed both bodies. Mr. Martin, did you want to identify what those differences are?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The May 20th memo covers three differences that have some substantive impact between the two bills based on my review of the two bills. And the first item has to do with the military service in line of duty death ERA police and fire survivor benefit issue. The Senate file I would eliminate the provision that treats military service in the line of duty, in military service death as an in the line of duty death for purposes of PERA, police and fire survivor benefits. The House reinstated the provision. The Pension Commission had initially recommended the deletion of the provision. Item two is more of an engrossing and drafting error problem. Combination of two things, the automatic engrossing process in the House inadvertently deleted the first two sections of the MERF provisions in the House version of the bill and was not caught prior to reading and processing of the bill. The Pension Commission staff, that's me, misidentified what you had intended with the MERF effective date. I did not make it retroactive, and that was corrected in a substantive in a Senate amendment to the Omnibus Pension Bill, but was not corrected in the House. And then the third item has to do with the membership of the Pension Commission. The House provides for increasing the Pension Commission membership from 10 to 14, and the Senate does not address the issue.
So, since we're operating off the Senate file, since it passed first, the line of duty, which is in the Senate bill, is as it came out of the Pensions Commission. It was amended to delete or to reinstate the stricken language in the House committee. The engrossing errors on MERF are corrected in the Senate bill. So. If that's what we choose to adopt, we do not need to take any action. It's already the Senate bill. And then the expansion of the Pension Commission was apparently an amendment in the House Government Operations Reform Technology and Elections Committee. It, as I said, it does not appear in the Senate File 430. Representative Murphy, how do you want to proceed?
Mr. Chair, I move that
Number two has been moved, which would basically to adopt the Senate language. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Anything further?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Could we have some, could Ms. Vanek come and give us some background on the numbers of people that are serving in the military under the provisions that could be affected? In the police and fire fund, and I realize that the language only refers to the police and fire fund, but there are other PRA members that are married and serving in the military, and that are not covered, and I'd like to know some statistics if she has them.
So for instance, if somebody is a snowplow operator, an example, they're not in the police department fund, but they may be in the National Guard or reserves to get deployed, and if they were killed, they would not be covered by current law because the line of duty only applies to police and firemen, but the question could be raised, well, should they be covered as well, too, as line of duty if they die in the military service, even though there wouldn't have been line of duty as a file clerk back home or whatever they did. So, Ms. Vanek.
Could you refresh us on some of those?
Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, Mary Vanek, Director of PERA. Our records currently show that in the Police and Fire Fund alone, there are 46 individuals currently on military leave. Of that, 17 of them are not vested. And what the provisions in the bill would do if the military duty definition is eliminated is it would at least require that the members be vested to receive a non-line of duty benefit. Of the 17 we've identified as not being vested, five of them are married and three of them have less than a year of service. So in our younger members, and it's those folks that really add a significant cost to the fund if the benefit is required. In the coordinated plan, we identified 66 individuals who are currently on military leave of absence. I can't remember the exact number. I know it was less than 20 of them are currently not vested members. But our analysis showed that they were, the majority of them, and again, I don't remember the number, were under the age of 35. So if a similar benefit were provided to them, which is not, it would be a significant cost, but that benefit is not available to them. And then in our correctional plan, we currently have 44 individuals who are military leave of absence, and half of them have less than 3 years of service in the correctional plan, but that plan is relatively new, and I didn't have an opportunity to see if they had any other service anywhere else. But again, when you look at the overall numbers just in PERA-covered plans, there are another over 100 people who are outside the police and fire plan who don't even have an opportunity for a similar type of benefit if they are if they lose their lives serving our country in the military.
And Ms. Vanek, I mean, these would tend to be younger people because that's people who wind up going into the military and going off into combat areas. Do you have any estimate as to the cost of the fund for one of them? I mean, assuming that they're fairly young, they've got, you know, some years of service but not close to retirement, what would the cost be if these individuals did go and they were declared to having died in the line of duty, whether they were in the police or fireman fund or one of the general, the other funds?
Mr. Chair, we looked at it in 2005 when there were only a handful of people in the police and fire fund who this benefit would have extended to because of the language. And the average benefit payable per month was right around $1,650 per month. The benefit that we paid in the one instance was a little over $1,700. And while we gave you the present value number to set aside funding for that, that was $346,000, the lifetime payout before any of our automatic adjustments were added was valued at $2.9 million for that individual, and she was in her early 20s.
So, one case.
Yes, and if that's a typical survivor, that can be, that can add up. Fortunately, we haven't experienced this again, and hopefully we won't, but if we do.
Question, Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Vanek. While the member is away on active duty and on a leave of absence, is that person, either through their employer or directly individually, contributing into the pension fund with that collective payment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, they are not currently contributing, but when they return to work, they have the option of making their contributions that would have been paid during their military leave, and then if they choose to make their contribution for that lost service, then the employer is required to make the employer contribution plus the lost interest to the fund to bring their service up to date so that they get credit for it after they return, but not it's not being covered while they are there.
And we've tried to distinguish between people who are serving, who are working in a job, then leave for military service and then come back. Now, we've spent quite a bit of time in this commission dealing with people that had military service before they started public service, and then they wanted to try to buy back things, and that created other issues, but they are allowed to buy back if they choose to do that. Sarah Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Vanek, and maybe this is a question for another day, but I would be interested in knowing how much it would cost the state for those returning military members if we were to look at providing the cost of that buyback for them. Because rather than, you know, doing something that might jeopardize the integrity of the fund, which I think is our concern here, not that we don't want military members to have these benefits, but that we have an obligation to the financial integrity of the fund. But if someone's coming back from military duty and they have not the extra funds and we don't want to put them at a disadvantage, I'd just be curious to know on average, say someone was gone for a year, how much of a contribution that would be and what that would cost the state.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, we can get those numbers to you tomorrow.
Any other questions, Ms. Vanek?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Vanek, under the House language, what is the, is there a prospective estimated cost?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I didn't do the cost analysis. I apologize. I could have it ready for you early tomorrow, but if we average $350,000 per individual as the amount we have to set aside, and there are five that we know that would be covered under the current language, and the other 12 who are on record as not being married, but we don't know that for sure because in the case with the St. Louis Park situation, we didn't have a record that they were married until after the death occurred. So those other 12 may be married, and we just don't know it.
President Cobb.
Mr. Chairman, wasn't there an estimate for the one case in St. Louis Park? Didn't you have some estimate as to what that case was going to cost?
Ms. Vanek?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kanya, we had to set aside for a post-term fund transfer $347,000 to cover a lifetime benefit of $2.9
million.
Lifetime?
The lifetime benefit to that person is $2.9
million. And we had to set aside $347,000 into the post fund to cover the cost of that.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Ms. Manning.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the House position on number one.
Now, recognizing, of course, that the Senate had a debate and we took a roll call vote and we opted not to delete it, and the House obviously went the opposite direction and opted to strike the language, remove the stricken language. So we have a difference here. But Representative Murphy has moved the House position. Is there discussion on that?
Well, Mr. Chair, there was a considerable amount of discussion on this yesterday. And there certainly was a considerable amount of discussion when it first went in on the House of Representatives side. And yesterday, several people did comment about this section, and Representative Tori Westrom, in particular, said I wasn't supposed to come back without it. And so that's why I'm offering the position.
And I've been in touch with the governor's office, and they had some concerns, and I was told last night by Ms. Cadoon that she had talked to Representative Westrom, and I was a part of those conversations, but apparently the governor's office is satisfied with the Senate's position, but this is what the conference committee is for. Sarah Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a considerable amount of discussion on this in the Senate as well. And I think that we should look at this today not as the House and not as the Senate, but rather as the Pension Commission. And it's easy, I think, to look at this situation or that St. Louis Park situation or like situations and be empathetic to that situation, certainly. But I think as the pension commission, our responsibility is to set that aside, if you will, and make decisions and look at this from the financial perspective and the precedent and the possible implications that could grow and develop from this. So I just ask members to really look at this today from the perspective of the pension commission.
Well, and Representative Lynch, you know, by a remarkable coincidence, the members of this conference committee happen to be members of the pension commission. I don't know how that happened, but that's the way it worked out. So we have the expertise. We are quite familiar with the bills that are before us. However, we are a conference committee at this moment, and which means that the Senate has taken a position and the House has taken a position. And each body does have a responsibility to defend the position as conferees of the position. But now, obviously, since they're mutually exclusive positions, we'll just have to see. It does take a majority vote on both sides to adopt any conference position, but Representative Murphy is defending the position of the House, as she must do. Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm not as committed because I didn't have to say anything on the floor of the House mm-hmm. the other day. But let me point out two reasons which I hadn't even thought of before. One, Senator Olson has just suggested something that might be of benefit to a lot more people with a lot smaller cost. And I would imagine you would do that. My guess is you might very well do that as a general fund cost, not even get the funds involved in it. Also, the issue which I hadn't thought of at all at the time, which is the fact that there's very good reasons why this extra benefit to someone serving in the line of who's killed in the line of duty occurs when you're thinking of the more hazardous duty of a police or a fireman as opposed to a snowplow operator. But it's hard, but when you're including it to then any military service, that could be anyone. And it's really hard to see why there should then be a difference between the kind of employment that the person had, the kind of public employment the person had, and being killed in the line of duty. And and I would imagine that any case that came before the pension commission with making that argument, I would think if we leave this in, it would be very hard for us to say that we should then deny it to the far broader class. Agreed to give it to this class. This is just no different.
Well, I made a very strong opposition to reverting to the prior language on the Senate floor. And as I say, the roll call vote defeated the amendment to change it. So.
And in the House,
it
was only done committed.
Oh, it's committed. I understand that, yes. But, okay. Further discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
The motion does not prevail. We have at least one other item, and then I will ask if anybody else has anything else they want to bring before us, if there's any issues with the bill that have not been addressed. But that is expansion of the Pension Commission membership, and this was a House provision. So,
I yield, Representative Kahn.
Chairman, this is a position that I've tried to do before. In fact, we did it in the House, and the Senate didn't do it. And the decision that was made was a compromise, which just shows that sometimes a compromise can be worse than either of the extremes. And because we had six for a while, and that was a real disaster. Six was a terrible number to have on the pension commission. What happened is that you increased the number of people by two, and you increased the quorum number by one, and whereas if you made it seven, you'd increase the number by seven, increase the number by four, increase the quorum by one also. So it works out much better in terms of the ability to get work. I just think we all know how hard we work, and we all know what a steep learning curve we had to think we know something about pensions. And I just think there aren't enough people in both bodies who do this. And I would particularly like, I would recommend to the House members, we haven't put restrictions on this, but I would recommend to the House membership, to the House leadership of making appointments, that we need another minority person, despite the terrific service of Representative Smith. But, and we would, and I would also like to put a first term on. Senate did put a bunch of first term on, but, you know, I'd like to. There are some really bright younger people who would, so I would like to make that motion. And if it doesn't work, you know, if you discover it after a few years, you can always go back.
Well, Representative Conn, I agree with you that I wish more people would pay attention to these issues, and I think if nothing else, the previous discussion we had highlights that. I mean, you just cannot go raiding the pension funds because we think that that's a neat thing. We could balance the state's budget and have lots of money for education if all we want to do is raid the pension funds. Well, we're not going to, okay? And woe to those who even think they should. But I don't know. We have had some very good people who served on this commission. I'm cautious at this moment of doing it, and we talked about this in the conference committee on state government budgets, and I think that at least for this 2-year cycle, we should maintain the membership that we have, and you know, I'm open to thinking about it and talking about it at some point. I just at this point, I'm personally not ready to go there yet, but you know, you and I will be talking to each other a lot over down the road, and I'm sure we can talk about this as well too. So.
I mean, most of our committees are bigger than 14, and this one
in the
has,
House, right?
And this one has,
right.
And this one has
small institution.
You know, this one has such a burden and such a steep learning curve that I really wish we would, particularly since we so graciously acceded to the other two senators.
Yes, you did. Are you moving the...
I would like to move it.
Representative Conn is moving the expansion provision. Is there discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying... Oops, I'm sorry. Senator Olson.
Well, that's okay, Mr. Chair. Yeah. I was just going to comment, Representative Conn, that I think, you know, as freshman members of the group that we want to defer to our experienced member, but I do take... Senator Betzold at his word that I'm sure he'll continue to talk to you about this and we really also appreciate the cooperation in getting through this meeting today.
And let me assure you, President Conn was very persuasive on the poet laureate issue, so.
Oh, thank goodness.
So she gets her way more often than not. So, on that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As well, say no.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Is there anything else that anybody wants to bring before us? Right now, as I understand it, the bill as it passed the Senate would essentially be the conference committee report. But you know, we want to make sure that there wasn't anything that was somehow overlooked, done wrong. That we are going to regret. Is there anybody who wants to bring anything before us at this time? I don't see, that's my LA moving. So. If not, Representative Murphy moves that Senate file 430 be adopted as the conference committee report. It's a discussion on that motion.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
As a result of this meeting, then in this, when the conference committee comes over, then it looks like we will concur.
We will come back to the conference committee report that is Senate File 430 as it passed the Senate, and then of course you'll have to move that the House also adopt the confiscated right. report as well, too, and explain the differences. Is there a discussion on that motion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails, and the conference committee meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.